On July 1st, voters in Mexico will head to the polls to elect a new president. On today's Backstory segment, we look at what's at stake in the election and how the influence of the drug gangs and the escalating drug-related violence has shaped the campaign. Joining us is Lucia Newman, the Latin American editor for Al Jazeera English. Lucia, I'm very pleased to welcome you to our show today.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for inviting me.
The former governor of Mexico State, Enrique Peña Nieto of PRI, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, is leading in the polls. Is it surprising that Mexican voters seem to be in favor of a candidate from a party that had such a tight grip on Mexican politics for over 70 years?
Well, you know, it probably isn't so surprising. When you look back at history, you find that in times of crisis, people often want to turn to more strong-line governments. And the PRI has a history of having, or at least people remember the PRI as being a party where at least there was less violence, where they kept, where things were more normal, quote-unquote, where things seemed to be less chaotic and out of control because they were being controlled. And it was also a time when there was this belief, and I think it was true, that the government had a kind of an understanding, a live and let live or peaceful coexistence policy with the drug cartels. And I think people, some of them, are very nostalgic for those days. They don't really care so much whether there's a deal made with them, but they just want the violence to end.
But the PRI were also almost dictatorial. There were many scandals, and there were those notorious student massacres in 1968.
Absolutely. I mean, but now, remember, Peña Nieto is painting himself as the new kind of gentler version of the PRI, the new generation that was born in a more democratic transitional period. Remember, this transitional period has only been over the last 12 years. So we're not talking about his generation or his entire generation, but it's certainly the picture that they are painting. And he is young. He's a young man. Many would say, though, that he's being represented and handled by a very, very old party with old tricks and old systems. So, you know, that is the big problem right now, the big dilemma. But Mexicans seem to not be concerned about going back to the PRI as much as they are about continuing with things as they are now. And they seem to believe that going back to the PRI may change it. Although I think that may not be the case at all. I don't think the PRI or any other party can go back to the way things were before.
Well, I'm assuming that his opponents in the race are trying to tie him to the worst aspects of the PRI in the past. But you said that the PRI kind of looked the other way when they were in power. They allowed the drug gangs to go about their business, and there was a lot of talk about payoffs and, in some cases, connections. That seems to be preferable to the current situation?
Strong evidence that during the last few governments, when the PRI was in power, there was a kind of an agreement to allow the drug cartels or groups to do more or less what they wanted as long as they didn't cause too much trouble. The government would occasionally favor one group against the other, and they would sort of neutralize each other. Occasionally, if you would be caught, put in prison, like what the world's biggest drug trafficker right now, and then he would manage to get out of prison. And this more or less kept things under control. The difference is that in those days, it was the Colombian drug cartels, which were the big kingpins. They were the ones that ruled the roost, and that is no longer the case. Mexico's drug gangs are now much more powerful than they ever were when the PRI was in power 12 years ago, and I don't think they need to negotiate any longer with the government the way they did back then.
Andres Manuel López Obrador, who's running on the platform of a leftist coalition, narrowly lost in 2006 to Felipe Calderón. He's been gaining in the polls. How has he been attacking Peña Nieto?
The last time when he said that he had the election stolen from him, he had a much more aggressive campaign, and some would argue that that is what basically did him in, why people didn't want to defend him. This time he's painting himself as the man who would be the president of all sectors, the poor, the rich. He has been careful not to attack Peña Nieto too directly. In fact, curiously enough, it is Josefina... I'm sorry, I just saw...
Josefina Vázquez Mota.
The ruling party. Yeah. Vasquez Mota, thank you. I'm kidding. Josefina Vasquez Mota has been much, much more aggressive. She's been saying that a vote for the PRI is like going back to the past. It's voting for the party that will make a pact with organized crime. It's authoritarian government, corruption, etc. But López Obrador has been more careful this time around to paint himself as the candidate of the future, the man who's going to be inclusive and who really will not rule as a president where business is as usual, and he will above all fight corruption. So that's been his key point in the campaign.
Well, all of this would suggest that the public is unhappy with the current situation, but the president, President Calderón's approval rating is around 52%. How come Josefina Vasquez Mota hasn't benefited more from his popularity?
Well, two things. The President Calderón's popularity has been rising, actually, in the last few months, surprisingly. It was much lower. Secondly, there's the feeling that Vasquez Mota was a very weak candidate. She's only beginning to look and sound strong just in the final stretch of the campaign, that she wasn't the right person for that job, and that she wasn't offering really something different, but rather to continue on the same course as the current government, and that wasn't what the electorate wanted to hear. Although President Calderón has been given very high marks on the macroeconomic front in terms of keeping the peace, quite obviously, he has not done so well.
Well, more than 50,000 people have died in drug-related violence since the crackdown began in late 2006. Is that one of the reasons that all three of the top candidates have proposed major changes in drug war strategies?
Well, you may be surprised to hear this, but if you really look at the fine print, they are not really offering to make a change in the drug war strategy. None of the candidates, not even López Obrador, none of them are offering to take the soldiers off the streets, to get the army off the streets, the navy off the streets, the federal police. There have been, as you know, widespread complaints of human rights violations and abuses, and also corruption among the members of the army now. Because the longer they stay in these areas that are controlled by the drug cartels, the more corruptible they are. And in fact, the PRI in one state is actually offering to increase substantially the number of, in Monterrey, is offering to substantially increase the number of soldiers and members of the Navy that are deployed there. In the municipality of Monterrey, to be specific, and they're talking about 1,800 new soldiers and to put a general in charge and even create a military base there. So probably this is not what people thought they were signing up for.
And then others have suggested shifting the drug war entirely to the federal police. Are they less corruptible?
They're talking, well, that's a matter of dispute, of course, but the idea is to have one police force instead of many little ones that are more easily penetrated and corrupted by by organized crime. That is something that is their end game. But in the meantime, they would further militarize the country. How long is that going to take? They're not giving any clear definition, any timelines whatsoever. Could take months, could take years.
My guest is Lucien Newman, Latin American editor for Al Jazeera English. We're talking about the upcoming Mexican elections, not all that far off, July 1st. On today's Backstory, this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. As Election Day nears, both political violence and drug-related violence have been on the rise. There was a journalist in Veracruz killed earlier this month. Another was kidnapped along with her young child. And some say that PRI is involved because they don't want journalists to cover the vote and any voting irregularities that may occur. Although CLI has said, PRI has said that they're running a clean campaign, of course.
Yes, of course. Well, I was just in Veracruz. In fact, the day after this latest journalist was killed, in fact, they had the 9 journalists killed in the state of Veracruz. It's an extraordinary number. And, of course, Veracruz has now become the latest hotspot in the drug war. It's been controlled by the Cetas cartel, and now the Juarez cartel has tried to move in, and so that always leads to more bloodshed. Who is exactly behind the killings, whether it's the PRI? I don't necessarily think that there is evidence to point to that, but certainly there's a lot of evidence to point to the fact to the Cetas and to other drug cartels. These were all journalists that were involved on the crime beat, and they were investigating precisely organized crime penetration in the state of Veracruz. But in general, there have been candidates killed, and there have been strong allegations that it was members of the PRI that killed them. One was a member of the PRD, and the another a member of the PAN, the National Action Party.
So, are we separating political violence from the drug gangs? Wouldn't there be some kind of connection?
Have a very vested interest. Absolutely, but not necessarily in the name of the PRI, if that's what I think I understood you were trying to make that connection. But the organized crime itself, of course, plays a role, and they are very interested. For them, it's extraordinarily important, not so much to determine the outcome of the presidential election, as you may think, but rather to have very, very control of who wins on the local level, at the municipal level. This is the weakest link, the easiest point of penetration, and that's where they operate. They operate in those corridors, and those are the candidates that they try to either buy or intimidate. And there have been many, many candidates, dozens of candidates, to mayor, to the position of mayor in Michoacán, in Jalisco, in many other states as well, that have resigned rather than run the risk of being elected. You can imagine that.
Despite the fact that, as I said earlier, over 50,000 people have died in drug-related violence since the crackdown began in late 2006, a recent poll by the Pew Global Attitudes Project found that 80% support President Felipe Calderón's crackdown on drug gangs. Are they just desperate, or do they think that it's working despite the fact that it doesn't seem to be working?
I think they want a quick fix, and I don't know, because I have read other polls that say exactly the opposite, that there's been a great, that President Calderon's policy is simply not working and that the numbers seem to prove it. Every day there are more and more dead people. 50,000 is right now the conservative number. Some groups are even saying as many as 70,000 people have died in the last 6 years since President Calderon declared this war against the drug cartels.
Peña Nieto has suggested that while he would continue to work with the United States to fight the drug gangs, he wouldn't be as cooperative as the Calderon government has been. Is that a way of attracting votes, or should the U.S. be worried that its partnership with the Mexican government will be shifting in some way?
I think the U.S. government probably does have some reason to be worried about that, because the PRI has traditionally been much more nationalistic and reluctant to allow in the United States. Some would argue that that was because if you let in the DEA and other experts, you are setting yourself up for being discovered with your hands in the till. But on the other hand, Felipe Peña Nieto has offered to bring in the former National Police Chief of Colombia, who is just retiring now, who has been credited with having brought down the Medellin and Cali cartels in Colombia as an advisor. So he's sort of putting the United States a little bit at bay, but bringing in what he calls experts to help him on this. The PAN has had a much closer relationship with the United States, and of course, Josefina Vázquez Mota to win, which seems highly unlikely. The cooperation with the United States would be expected to increase on the anti-narcotics front.
We talked about corruption in the police. Earlier this month, a video showed police officers marching men from a hotel in the middle of the night, and the men showed up dead, and the officers are suspected of acting on orders from the drug gangs. So are the many police just working for the drug gangs these days?
The shortest answer is absolutely yes. I was in Monterrey. I was interviewing a lot of family members of people who have disappeared, and they were actually detained by members of the traffic police. That's why I'm telling you that at the municipal level, it is extremely important to control the authorities. They would detain these people. They would grab them, basically kidnap them, and they would disappear. And the mother of one of these young men went to the police station and was received by someone who was introduced as the commander of the police station. And the man said to her, "Oh, don't worry, come back tomorrow. They've been roughed up a little bit. They'll be better tomorrow." There were actually four young men that had been kidnapped or detained. When she came back the next morning, they said, "We don't know what you're talking about." She said, "But I spoke to the commander." "The commander? What commander?" It turned out the commander was one of the lead members of the Zetas in Monterrey, who at this point has been detained for another kidnapping. He was actually inside the police station. So that's just to give you one example.
Last week, President Obama announced changes in U.S. immigration policies that would mean that hundreds of thousands of people will not be deported. What's the reaction been in Mexico and the rest of Latin America? I know you're in Rio de Janeiro at the moment. Has that been playing big in the press throughout Latin America?
Not as big as you would think. It did make the front page in Mexico, and it was a welcome announcement for sure. It was also seen very much as an electoral ploy on the part of the Obama administration to getting more Latino votes, and that may be the case, but it was still welcome news. And the reaction of most Mexicans is we hope that this will lead to further reforms in immigration, which have been long promised but have not happened.
You're in Rio, as I said, where the UN Sustainable Development Rio Plus 20 Summit is underway. What's the mood like at the conference?
It is extremely somber. It's being called by some the Rio minus 20 summit. Unless there's a miracle, the final document is basically going to be a reiteration of previous commitments or statements of goodwill and intentions, but no strong verifiable commitments of any kind towards sustainable development goals. And in fact, the most extraordinary thing is that they're not even enumerating what the sustainable development goals are. They have postponed that decision for another 18 months. There will be a 30-person commission appointed to make recommendations to the UN General Assembly 18 months from now. So very, very poor showing. However, there are tens of thousands of people here. It's an enormous conference, many of them representing civil society, private enterprise, science, Nobel Peace Prize winners, NGOs, environmental groups, the whole...
It sounds to me like we just...
Was not... Hello?
Yes, we're still with you.
Hello? Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. I heard there was an interruption on my phone. They feel that there is something positive to be to come out of all this, to rescue this. They say that really that the main thing here is that civil society is going to take the lead, and they're coming up with a lot of very, very interesting proposals and initiatives. They are way ahead of the politicians.
Well, has the
but,
lack of...
it's certainly not what we might have thought.
Do you think the lack of progress is directly linked to the continuing global economic slump?
It does have an impact, but it is not the only reason. There are just too many different interests at play here. We have the energy companies, we have the developing countries versus the developed countries. The developed countries obviously do not have the money they used to have. Finance a whole array of projects and support mechanisms for sustainable development vis-a-vis developing countries, that money was never put forward. So there are a lot of different conflicting interests here, and basically I think it boils down to a lack of leadership on the part of the world leaders.
Lucia Newman is the Latin American editor for Al Jazeera English, which is available in New York City on Channel 92 if you have Time Warner Cable, on Channel 481 if you have Verizon Fios. And I thank you so much for talking with us about Mexico and a little bit about the Rio conference as well on today's Backstory segment.
Not at all. Thank you for inviting me.